obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the month club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.
Well, hi, everybody. You all want to be here for work. You want to know if you're taking your recovery to work, right? So what we're going to do today is we're going to explore the connection between addiction, and that may be any kind of addiction. You may be here because you're an alcoholic. You may have drug addiction. You may be Al-Anon and have that kind, control addiction. But whatever it is, when you have that addictive gene, it affects you at work in such subtle and unconscious ways. And it really often impairs, us from really experiencing the joy and the fulfillment and all the reward that is really possible for us to enjoy. But because we have this little quirky stuff going on inside of us, it really blocks it. So my name is Mary Lynn, and I'm an alcoholic. And I created this workshop about 6-7 years ago. And I did because this is my struggle in sobriety. And I am sober 27 years, and I have spent all 27 of them dealing with this issue. Sometimes successfully, sometimes not so. And I'll talk to you about that. And I am fortunate that I have my background as an alcoholic and have practiced the Al-Anon program and a million other 12-step programs. And I also have the background of professionally, I have worked in the area of career development and career coaching. So I have worked actually with normal people. And then I have worked with us. And I wanted to tell you, we are different. And I'll go into that. So when we're talking about work, work is for if you have a job, if you have a business, you may be unemployed, but you are still thinking about work. You're still in there, even though you may not be doing anything. You may be a volunteer. You may be retired. However, anytime you are interacting with people for a common good or for money, you are working. And so this really, is broad based. Let me turn off my phone here. We don't want anybody calling me in the middle of this. So if you wonder if this workshop is for you today, I'll just give you a couple of signs. I know a lot of you have seen the flyers. If you have had an experience where work is an ongoing source of stress, you are not making the money you want, you feel underpaid, underappreciated, maybe overwhelmed, you have so much to do, you somehow can't get it all in, and nobody is appreciating you for it anyway. And you are also, for all of this, just not getting it done. Maybe you're experiencing a transition. You may be somebody who is approaching retirement. You may be headed into a layoff or have been laid off. You may be in a company or in a job situation in which there is a lot of change going on. And that's making you very fearful. So anybody here that have any of these signals? Okay, good. Well, we have a problem. But we also have a solution. And the solution is in the steps. So what we're going to do today, what I'm going to do, is I'm going to share my story and let you know that I fully qualify for this. And then we're going to do a fun exercise that you will be able to see how this applies personally to you. So that I'm not just talking, but also you're getting a sense of how it affects you. And then we are going to take what comes up for you, and we're going to start to go through, we're focused on the first three steps of how this applies and what you can do that really specifically relates to this topic. So, work is a tricky thing, because we all have to do it. We spend a lot of our lives working. And if you work too much, or you work too little, or you have problems at work, it, you know, it doesn't really matter. The solution is in the 12 steps. And what I want to say is that people who do not have our little quirk, they can get away with a lot more than we can. And so they do have some of the same issues at work, but I can tell you from my experience, professionally, they just deal with them a whole lot differently. For instance, they take advice. You know, I am utterly amazed when a client comes to me who's more of a normal perspective, and I point out that they're having some addictive behavior at work and that they are completely unbalanced and there's things that they should be doing differently. And you know what they do? They change. They go, oh, thank you, Mary Lynn. This is so good and so helpful. I'm going to go out and fix that. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, we're different. I do want to tell you that I have a number of pages on the 12 steps from 1 through 12 in relationship to my perspective, my personal perspective, which all of this is, on how the 12 steps relate to work. I'm going to focus on the first three for today because we need to get out of here. And there's lots to do here. So before I leave, before we all leave, I'm going to hand out an evaluation. If you want these steps, all you have to do is give me your email, and I will email it to you anonymously. So let me tell you a little bit about how I got started doing this and why I'm doing this. You still hearing me okay? Yeah. Okay. Better. Okay. I'm not supposed to move anything. I was given a lot of direction. Makes me so nervous. okay. So I am the typical person. I was raised in the Midwest. My family was alcoholic. I was neglected. Everybody was busy doing other things, primarily drinking. And so I grew up really desperately wanting to be loved and to get attention and to get somebody to pay attention, to see how good I was. And that really just didn't happen much in my childhood. So I developed a thing which I call the pleasing, proving, achieving syndrome. And the pleasing, proving, achieving syndrome is I needed to be sure that you liked me. And so I would go to any lengths for that to happen. And I wanted to prove to you that I was really a spectacular person or acceptable person or just worthy of anything. And things disappearing. And that just didn't happen for me in my childhood. So my big break came when I went to work, and I moved from Chicago to California, and I got a job as a temporary secretary, and through a whole set of bizarre circumstances don't have time to explain, I was tapped to head a division for this Fortune 500 company from moving up from the temporary secretary position, which certainly was quite a move. And it was amazing. I got accolades. My name was in the paper. I was one of the first females. This was a long time ago. To be in this kind of position, they knew me. They knew me on Wilshire Boulevard. And it was so cool. It was amazing. And I was hooked. Okay? Work, I really clearly got, was the answer to all my problems. And so I did it with a fervor. And I worked long hours, and any problem could be fixed by working more. And I didn't have to feel, and I had no concept of 100% because I had no boundaries. You know, people were liking me, and they were saying I was cool. And it's like, whatever you want me to do to get that, I'm going to get it. And, of course, that started to go away after a while because I didn't get all that efficient. And the truth was, I was mostly incompetent because I was promoted for the wrong reasons. It was because the federal government had come in and told my company they need to have women in higher positions, and they just literally scanned, and then blonde went over in the corner, you know. And so I was not well trained. So what happened is I had to keep working. It's like I had to keep working to keep it going because I really didn't know what the hell I was doing. And with that, all that adrenaline, all that, I just lived on adrenaline. I didn't have to eat. I didn't have to speak to my husband. I mean, I didn't have to do anything because I was on the high. And what a lot of people who are working today don't understand is that what we suffer from is the addiction to the adrenaline. And we have, especially for people like us, an inability to stop. I don't know if you've ever been in a situation where you're working on a project and you start going at it and you're like a dog with a bone. You know, you're just in there. You can't walk away from the computer. You're like, you're intense. You've got it. You're going to do this. You're going to finish it. I'm against deadline and nobody's going to interrupt you, and you're not going to. Anybody ever had that? You know, where you just, you know, and there is no stop. If you have to have a heart attack right there on the keyboard, then that's what's going to happen. Because you ain't stopping, because we don't have a stop button. And we don't have it. Many of us do not have it when it comes to work either, but we don't know that that's what's going on. And I certainly didn't know that's what was going on with me. I did not realize that it was actually a dysfunction with me. And eventually I completely burned out, and I knew what the problem was. The problem was them. You know, they made me work so hard. They put a lot of pressure on me. They were horrible people. So I quit. And I showed them I started my own business. And because then I could be free. And I was. And I was like somebody, like in the big book, they talk about the guy who retired and put on his carpet slippers and now was completely free to drink himself to death. And that's what having a business was for me, you know, is now I was completely free. There was nobody. I had no structure. I had no end time. I had no start time. And along with this, of course, because of my addictive personality, my drinking was escalating. My drug use was escalating. Everything was now in kind of a perfect storm situation. And so I was, you know, in a pretty compulsive, obsessive state in mind. Meanwhile, I was working long hours. If you were to tell somebody, does Mary Lynn work hard? They say, she is the hardest worker I know. Was I making any money? No. Because working hard does not mean you are productive. And this is a difficult thing for us to grasp because we think working hard is very, you know, very admired in the workplace. Just put in those hours, put in those extra hours, get in your business, put in all those hours. Certainly, if you do all that, something wonderful will happen. But the truth is, we need to be working from a spiritual place. We need to be tapped in to a much larger sense than just sitting and working. And that's really what I want to talk about more today, is how to work from a higher frame of mind. And because then you will have to work a lot less and you will get much, much better results. In 1986, I got sober, and I got sober in July, and 3 months later, I was diagnosed with bladder cancer, and told that I probably had 6 months So I was newly sober. I was, you know, I had no idea what I was doing. And I remember coming down from the doctor's and sitting in the car after he told me, yes, we, you know, the tumor is malignant, and yes, this is the protocol. We're, you know, we went through all that horrible conversation. And I sat in my car just kind of stunned. And the thing that I thought about to myself was not how much money I was making or whether I was going to be rich and famous, but what I was thinking is, I don't know who I am. And I have a fear that I am going to leave the planet and have no idea who was here. Because I had parceled myself out to such a degree of taking care of everybody else first, of making sure everybody was happy, of making sure that I looked good at all costs, that I just didn't know what was left that was mine. And so what in that car, the vow I made to myself was not that I would go out and work, but rather that I had no idea about this concept of passion. Or, you know, what excited me or what I liked or what I didn't like, because I'd spent all my time doing what you liked. So I don't know if I liked that or not. It was cool and you said it was cool, so I did it. And so in the car, what came to me was, I am going to spend every day doing something I care about. I don't know what that is. It's small stuff. And for me in the beginning, it was incredibly small stuff. It was like, am I going to the beach today because I want to go to the beach, or am I going because Virginia is going to make me go to the beach? Do you see what I'm saying? You know, am I going to go do things or because the peer pressure, or am I going to do it because it's really meaningful to me? And I had no idea. I did not know the answers to these questions. I truly did not. And that's all I knew. All I knew is that's what I was going to do. I knew nothing about where the cancer was going to take me, or obviously I made it. So for those months thereafter, tapping my inner passion was really, really my focus. And they were little decisions. And so what I want to tell you, what I discovered for me, and this is my experience, is that when you have energy, when you think about doing something and it makes you a little excited, then that's something you're supposed to at least start going toward. When you are doing something that feels really dull and boring and dead, even if it's, you know, everybody tells you that you should be doing it and how lucky, because everybody told me I was so lucky to have this job, and I didn't like it. I didn't know who I was. And so the energy became how I could tell if I was on track or not. So I always tell people, follow the energy, you know, and so many of us, this is me included, spend a lot of times doing things we ought to do, that we should do, that are good for business, that are good for our job, and we keep ignoring the stuff that we really could get excited about, but that's like when we get extra time. That's when, you know, after Armageddon, you know, when the national debt gets paid, you know, and we're doing nothing to make it a present reality in our lives, because why? We're working. Working becomes the excuse for not taking care of ourselves and not doing what we need to do to really be passionate, joyful, fulfilled people. So anyway, that became my whole focus in life for a long time. And I started talking about it, and I had no career plans, but somehow over the last 25 years, I've kind of gotten known for this is kind of something that I help people do. Now, when I've given this workshop before, I just want to be really honest with you and tell you this is where it used to stop, and then I started to go into, oh, well, let's talk about this and that. But that's not the way it is, because I did do a lot of that. I did follow the passion, and I had a lot of wonderful things happen to me, and I did start a business, and it really was going well. But I am still an addict. And so in 2010, me with all of my knowledge, me with three of these workshops behind my belt, In 2010, I overdid it. I took on too much. I wasn't vigilant in my meditation. I wasn't vigilant in taking care of my steps. And what happened to me is that because I overdid, I ended up in Little Company of Mary cardiac unit for 4 days. I learned through my body, in case you wondered. And I did not have a heart attack. I had an odd thing called Takotsubo syndrome. And Takotsubo syndrome is exactly the addiction. It is where you have so much adrenaline in your body that your adrenal system is pushing so much adrenaline that it shut down my left ventricle. I have no idea how that happens. It's a medical thing. I don't know, but it happened to me. And it was all through adrenaline. I cannot tell you enough what a lethal drug adrenaline is. When you start pushing, when it is not the work that kills us, it's the pushing that kills us. And when you start pushing and you start pumping that adrenaline, and then when you really get into it, because you know, after your natural energy is gone and now you're adrenalized, then you got to keep that going. And you know what we do? We go to Starbucks. We get an energy drink. And it adds and it adds and it adds. And we push some more and we push some more. It does severe damage to your heart. I mean, this is medically. I'm just telling you what, from what I've read in trying to take care of myself. So despite the fact that I've been sober for a while, despite the fact that I have information, self-knowledge avails us nothing. But what does is working the steps and understanding that, you know, despite the fact that it's cunning, baffling, powerful, we get a reprieve through our spiritual condition. And so that's what I want to talk about a little bit today. So why as a group do we seem to struggle a little bit more at work? Well, as I said, we're mentally and bodily different from our fellows. It is the last acceptable place where addiction is really acceptable. They don't care if you work a lot of hours. They don't care if your family is suffering. They don't care if your heart is suffering. You know, it is really okay. Now, I know that corporate America and some companies, especially smaller companies, are really starting to get a more health-oriented vigilance about this. But the truth is, it's our own responsibility to take care of ourselves. And it's just that it's just nobody knows it, you know? So, as a group, we've been raised in a lot of fear, abandonment, dysfunction, alcoholism, and neglect. We make great workers. So we need to be recognized. We need validation. We need people to do things that we want them to do. We need to control, you know, and we are a little nervous and a little fearful. Almost all of the time. So, I don't know. That's my experience anyway. It says in the big book, we suffer from every form of self-centered fear. And then we take it to work. So, let's talk about dogs. hard transition. Anyway. I read this article a few years ago about show dogs, and it just really struck a chord with me. And with show dogs, they take dogs that are very fearful, and they turn them into show dogs, and in which they have to be very confident, very obedient, and they can't be fearful if you're going to be a show dog. And they train it out of them. I love this concept. You get trained out of your fears. So, you know, so when a dog has a response, what's interesting is there's only two responses that a dog has. They are either aggressive And they, you know, they growl and they bite and they snarl at you. Or the other thing is they're very passive. You know, somebody comes toward them, they cower, they pull back, they whimper. And those are the two ways that dogs experience fear. It's not altogether different than human beings, by the way. What we're going to talk about now is you're going to find out what kind of dog you are. Okay, so I got carried. Now, Rich, you're on. So I'm just pass out these things. And these are some descriptions. And if you need pens, I have one. I have some. I have one, which all of which you can use. Oh, there's pens in the shelf, too. Look at that. That's amazing. Marriott has everything.
To obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the month club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.
Do you need a pen?
Yes.
Yeah. We've got plenty. Yeah, I know to bring pens. Not everybody is supplied. Okay, I want you to take a minute, and I just want you to read through this, and I'm going to read through it with you, and I want you to circle the ones that you relate to. There may be things here that you don't relate to at all. There may be some you relate to a lot. There may be some that are like, maybe yes, maybe no. So, the fearful aggression part is working long hours, competing to get attention, or if you're avoiding, you know, you use it to avoid your feelings and your relationships and your personal life. I did a lot of that. Two is overcommitting, setting unrealistic deadlines, unconsciously seeking tension and crisis for the rush. Or using the pressure and overcommitment, and a lot of people do that. When they do that, they get so overwhelmed, they procrastinate and don't do anything. Procrastination.
Do you have pens, did you say?
Yes, yes. Oh, I'm sorry. There's some on the wall, and there's some in my hand. Thanks. Sometimes number three is we seek approval and validation. We look for concrete bottom line results to show our self-worth. See, I made this money for you. I brought you in these clients. I did this. See, look at me. or there is a fear of losing approval. So because of that, on the passive side, we don't speak up. We don't ask for raises. We don't charge enough. If you're an entrepreneur, that's a big issue. We don't have to take the time off to have our personal needs met. We get impatient when people don't respond. I love that, you know. Why didn't you do it? Why didn't you do it right now? And one of my favorites is irritable when interrupted. Five, overschedule. Consistently racing against the clock, blaming bosses and clients for the volume of work. Or on the passive side, avoiding setting personal boundaries and taking full responsibility for avoiding setting personal boundaries and taking responsibility for our lives. We don't make room for more than work. We are critical of our subordinates and our coworkers. We set unrealistic standards. Number six, we strive for perfectionism, so because it makes us look good. And we are so afraid that somebody won't be good enough because we don't have a. Most of us don't have a because we have a, don't have a stop button. We also don't have an enough button. There is no enough. So it really leaks over into the workplace in terms of perfectionism. Difficulty delegating. If I want it done right, I'll do it myself. Problem with authority. Don't like being managed. Yeah, I hear that. Constantly plan and think about future events, you know, producing confusion, lack of focus. Frenetic mental activity produces overwhelm, so forth and so on. That or on the other side, we quit too soon. Okay, so we're either a driven or a victim, and it all turns out to be we can't stop it. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about mine, and then I see you, bye, you've been wonderful. My stellar husband. Thank you. So mine shows up in a lot of perfectionism, and I want to tell, for those of you, how many of you here have a sort of a perfectionism button? I see. Okay. Well, you're in the right place. Okay, so I want you to think about perfectionism a little differently. Perfectionism is an addiction to lack. Because what perfectionism is, if you take the full glass of water and I tell you that it's three quarters full, I am telling you the perfectionist will say, but what about that other quarter? What are we going to do about that other quarter? We need to do that. Perfectionism for the detail that might be out of place, the thing that could make it better, and what it does, and it comes a lot, all this from our childhood when we were disapproved of and some we didn't do the bed right, make the bed right or whatever it was, and we're still looking for that approval and we're still afraid we might do it wrong or what if we make a mistake. So this is an area where I told you that I had no sense of 100%. You know, I had no sense of 100%. If somebody said, would you give me 100%, Mary Lynn? I'd say, oh, God, yeah, absolutely. And they said, will you give me 110? Oh, sure, you know. And if I was going to compete with somebody and they said, I'm going to give 110, I'll go, I'm 120. I'll give 120. Okay, so today I want you to know that my rule is no more than 70%. Because you have to have 30% left for you. And if you are operating your life giving 70% of it away, which is okay and good, you got to have at least 30% left for you. And we're not taught that. We don't think like that. And especially as addicts, we really don't. Delegating is a huge thing that I run into in my business. Business people, everybody has a tough time delegating. But boy, people who are alcoholics really have a tough time delegating. Because what does that mean? Let go of control. I'm not interested in that. Are you kidding me? Yes, I work too much. And yes, I'm not making enough money. And yes, I'm completely overwhelmed. But delegate? Are you kidding me? So, and delegating isn't just if you're in a business. Delegating is a mindset. It's an attitude where everything that comes across your path is looked at as, is this taking advantage of my highest skills, the ones that I'm really here to express in my life? And if it's not, how can I give it to somebody else? People who are working, I have clients come to me that are working their butts off for somebody else, and they come home and do their own housework. I'm like, why? Why are you doing that? You know, there are, you know, I it just boggles me. So you need to start to think, what can I get off my plate? It's not what can I hold on to, what can I control, what can I let go of? Where am I not using somebody else's brilliance to expand my life? But we don't look at it like that. So I really will tell you that delegating just even a little will change your life. If you're suffering from any overwhelm, if you're doing too much, the first thing you have to do is figure out whether it's from your family, that you, however you do it. And incidentally, one of the biggest issues is people say, well, I can't afford to pay anybody. There's lots of ways to do it. You can trade services with people. And you'll be surprised. A client tell me there are people out there, Mary Lynn, that will work and do amazing stuff for next to nothing. Had I known this, I would have done this a long time ago. There are people who need money, and you can give it to them. Not even a lot. They take over a lot of your stress. So I want you just to think about that. I'm sure you're going to talk to me about that. Okay. Working hard does not mean that you're doing anything. That's the biggest issue. And I will just give you a quick, this is just a statistical thing, that the brain is only equipped to produce energy, to work at a high level of productivity, depending on who you are, between 2.5 and 4 hours at a stint. That means if you are sitting at that computer and you are working 5 hours, you just had a dead hour. Because what they did, they took and so what happens is, you know, certainly this happens to me all the time, where you're sitting in front of a computer or you're even, you know, someplace where it's very social, you start to feel yourself get burned out. You know, you start to feel yourself go, oh God, you know. But you know what we're taught to do? We push through it. We're soldiers, man. We're going to get to the other side. We're in control, and we're going to make it happen. And we do. And we use our adrenaline, and we push. Okay? They did an MRI of a brain that was fatigued. And the MRI of the brain that was fatigued is showed up on the screen exactly as a brain that was sound asleep. Now, you're still in front of the computer, you're still working, and you're still thinking something's going on, but you are really brain dead. And you wonder why maybe some of your productivity isn't very good. Some of your ideas aren't very good. I'm sure all of you have amazing ideas. Please, I'm not saying that. But when we get fatigued, this is what happens. It's a reality. And so I know you're thinking, well, geez, Mary Lynn, I can't get up from work at the end of 4 hours and say, toodles, I'm done now. My brain is fried. But what you can do is you can start working with the other side of your brain. So let's say that you have been doing a lot of work. I just use a computer because we're all on the computer so much today. And you hit that point. You get up and use the other side of whatever you are doing, do the opposite of. So the opposite of that is getting up, moving, taking a walk, being social, going to the break room, going to get your banking done, whatever it is, do something completely opposite. So you give this side a rest. And you will find when you come back that you feel differently and you will get more done. Another thing, and this is just a practical thing with the working hard, is one of the big energy breaks that you can have that people do not take advantage of, even people who are in their own business, is lunch. You know, lunch is the greatest energy boost that you can have. And I want to tell you, if you're eating your lunch at your desk, it's lethal. Stop doing that. You know, lunch is a time to get up, move around. You need the nutrition. You need the socialization. You need the movement. And it's all done under, you know, in a fair way. So lunch is a big brain balancer. I didn't know I was going to talk about that right now. Anyway, gotta stop. Okay. So those are some of mine. I want to hear. I want to hear some of yours. And rather than everybody traipsing up here, tell me what came up for you. Somebody tell me What came up for you in this little exercise?
I have a bad habit of not taking lunch. Yeah, I step in the building in the morning and I don't see the evening until I walk out. I don't.
Okay. All right. Yeah. We have a. Okay. So she's. Okay. So you know kind of what your job is. Take lunch. Yes, and I'll try to yell this out.
One of the things that came up for me is that on some of them, I was like equally both.
That's it. It sometimes.
So like on this one, impatient when people do not respond fast enough. I want instant responses. Yes. Irritable when interrupted. Yes. Because I'm so busy in my head that when you interrupt me, I get exhausted. And then on number 8, where I constantly plan and think about future events and multitask, I'm doing that all the time. Which leads me to the frenetic mental activity produces overwhelm results.
Do you see how all this works together? Yeah.
And then I go over here to this extreme.
Yeah.
And that's where I've been for the last 8-9 months since I took this company job.
And what I want to point out is, do you see the addictiveness of it? Mm-hmm. Do you see how, you know, you start to get into that thing? I don't know what it is. And while it's crazy and frenetic, and it's not getting us any place, something about it feels so good. because of our genetic disposition. Yes, ma'am.
Okay, this one with number 7.
Could you stand? That might help us all. Yeah.
Yeah, this one with number 7, I want it done right. I want it done right. I'll do it myself.
Yes.
I once had a small business, and this woman wanted to be my partner. Forget it.
Yeah, we're not going to have any partners.
Authority.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you.
You're
welcome. Yeah, thanks, because this is, you know, we all need to know we're not alone. Yeah.
Hello.
You want to stand up pretty?
I really related to the part about being critical. I'm highly critical of myself and the people that I work with, and I just hate it because nobody can do anything right, including me.
That's a real double bind situation.
Yes.
Nobody can do anything right, including me. This woman is highly accomplished, incidentally. Yes, ma'am. Stand up.
Yeah. I work very long hours, but when I'm not at work, I'm thinking about work and what's
yes.
going on at work.
Yes.
And I can't stop.
Yes.
I'm at work when I'm not at work.
Yes. And I love, thank you so much for sharing that. And you can't stop. Because what? I mean, I don't mean in work sense, you know, the addiction is. See that this is normal. That this is what we. I mean, it's an addiction. It is not something wrong with you, but we're going to talk about how to fix some of this. Yeah, a little bit. Yes, ma'am. Yes, Casey.
Hi. Well, the one that I'm seeing coming up is the life is serious, no time to be frivolous. So it's like, okay, get this job done. And get it done and get it done quick and, you know, stay on track and. And it's like there's this, when people are around me, they really feel that, you know, seriousness.
Yeah.
And so that, you know, it's not very effective with other people, and it's not very fun for me.
It's not fun, and it doesn't make other people feel good either.
No.
Yeah. So we have problems with our relationships and work for all of these reasons. Thank you so much, everybody, for sharing. You're such a good group. You are not alone. You are not crazy. And you do have a problem. I just don't know what else to say about it. Okay. So, what do you do if you're a dog? And how do they train these dogs to be any better? So they use a technique that's called counter conditioning, and they see what triggers the dog's fear, and they see the behavior that they have when it's triggered and how they react, and then they focus on simultaneously stopping the negative behavior and teaching these dogs and conditioning to them to do something positive in its place. Does this sound at all familiar? Everybody in this room has experienced counter conditioning. We are the result of counter conditioning. Because when we came to this program, when our fears were triggered, we drank. Or we did whatever we did. And we had to come and abstain from that behavior. And we had to stop going to the bar, and we had to replace it with meetings, sponsors, and the steps. So what they did with the dogs, Bill Wilson figured out we had to do for us. Okay? We cannot continue. It's one thing to say, yes, I do all this. Oh, yes. Well, that's because I'm kind of an alcoholic and I have addictive issues. But it is another to say, and it's going to change. And I'm going to go through the first three steps here. We're doing good on time, aren't we? Where are we on time? I'm doing okay. So we're going to start by going through the steps a little bit, and the first thing we have to do is stop. That means we have to abstain from something. Step is admitted we were powerless over reacting in ways that makes our life and our work unmanageable. You are powerless over this behavior. That's incredibly better. Yeah.
How about that? There we go. How about that? Or we could pull this one
out. It's just too many choices. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. So, for me, my mind and body is geared to going to the adrenaline bar. Okay? I really, even with the best of intentions, sometimes overhit the mark, you know, as what happened to me before. I will say that my tool today is that I have developed this awareness that I'm really paying attention to when my energy drops, and really, I have a lot of different kinds of activities through the day now, and that has increased my productivity immensely and my peace of mind. So, but in order to stop, we have to do something, you know? So you are powerless over the initial control to be a perfectionist, to procrastinate, to judge, to overwork, whatever your deal is, but you can introduce new behavior just like a dog. So when we stop drinking, what is our abstinence at work? What is it that we're going to abstain from? How are we going to stop going to the bar? And it can be a very small thing, but you would be surprised how a one small behavioral change will start to change, start to set a chain of events going, going, period. Okay, so what I want you to do is you looked at what kind of dog you were, okay? I think you all have a pretty good grasp on maybe something that needs to change. And on the back of it, you will see, at the back of your page, you will see that there is a question. And I just want you, we'll do one question at a time. I can see what they are. Okay. So the first one is, I am powerless, and the behavior I need to abstain from is. So I'm just going to tell you what has come up in other workshops. You know, that's leaving after a certain period, after, you know, there's a certain period, 6 p.m. or whatever. From working after dinner, he used to take his work home, and his wife was very annoyed. Sometimes it's just abstaining from complaining, because when we're at work and we're complaining a lot, what it does is it really sets up an energy, and it makes us feel bad about ourselves, and it makes us feel bad about them, and maybe we need to substitute a gratitude list. Because as long as we're there, wherever there is, we need to be making the best of it. So whatever your deal is, you know, pick one. Don't, you know, just pick one that's really kind of a key thing for you that you could abstain from. And I'm going to show you what to put in its place. So don't panic. That's what happens is, like, I'm going to stop doing this. Oh, my God, I don't know if I can do this or not. And the problem is, it is just like being a dry drunk. We all know here you can't just stop drinking. You have to have something in its place. And so that's a process that I want to instill here is, but first you abstain. You know, we can't talk to you about working the steps while you're still sitting in the bar. So there's just still has to be some form of abstinence. So, of course, I want to hear what some of your abstinence is. Somebody give me an idea of abstinence for you. Yes, sir.
Complaining.
Complaining. That's a big one. That's a big one.
Whining. I'm overwhelmed. I have no control over these people.
Yeah, you don't. Complaining, whining. I have no control. Just because this comes to me, I love the word overwhelm. It just, you know, we all relate to it so tremendously. I really would suggest to all of you who suffer from overwhelm, you stop using the word. Because a lot of times what is overwhelming us is telling everybody how overwhelmed we are and giving them the list, you know, the list. Let me tell you, do you know how much I have on my plate? Mother is coming and and by the time you get through with it, you're like, oh my God, how am I ever going to get through my life? However, if you don't put your focus in, because what you focus on expands. So if you don't focus on all that and you start focusing on some things that are going right and you just refuse to use the word overwhelm, you will find that you are less overwhelmed. Yes, yes, ma'am.
Just stopping the if this, then this, what if this, then this, because then all of a sudden it's like I'm way over in the future. I've already gone.
Yeah. If this happens, then what will happen after that? Well, yeah.
I have a plan A, B, C.
Plan A, plan B, plan B, plan C, plan D. That's a great abstinence. I love that. Somebody else raise their hand. I'm sorry.
Impulsiveness.
Impulsiveness.
And overcommitment.
And overcommitment. How do you know if you're overcommitted?
Well, it kind of relates to the impulsiveness for me. It's, you know, if I'm in a conversation with a boss or, you know, seeking approval, I may impulsively say, I can do that. I'll do that.
Oh, this has never happened to anybody here.
And so they kind of go together for me. You know, it's kind of like a pause, you know, brings you to a place where you, let me consider that. Let me think about that. I'll get back to you on that.
Great. That's great. Yeah. Yes, ma'am, over here.
People pleasing.
Oh dear. Tell me how you do that.
Well, I just had somebody, I was at a group, and I'm a group representative. And one of the treasurer came over at another time and she said, you don't have to please. You don't have to excuse. You're fine the way you are. There's no problem.
It's just amazing, isn't it?
And I was like, I still want to do it. Explain. I want to say,
explain.
Oh, look at me, love me. I'll please you.
Yes. It's a very common thing. I think it's also, you know, it's a very common thing, especially in this group. You know, it's, you know, we do, hey, it's a normal thing to want to be loved, guys. You know, that's it. There's nothing dysfunctional about that. It's, and a lot of us didn't get it. So, you know, we're trying to figure out some other way to get it. So, okay. So, you've all kind of figured out what you might, just something simple that you might abstain from. Some of these things that were suggested, do you think that if you could do them, that it might shift something for you? Sounds like yours, all of you that you talked about. I really want to encourage you that this is not making a sweeping change in your life. This is about becoming more conscious. I mean, really, this workshop, I hope, is about becoming more aware of what you're doing, more aware of what's happening to you, and starting to commit to making some changes and get more proactive, because that's what we have to do in sobriety. And so the second step is, now that we're going to be abstaining a little, is came to believe that a power greater than myself can restore me to sanity. Whew. Working 60 hours a week is insanity. Our bodies are not meant to do it. Our minds are not meant to do it. It's spiritually depleting. Thinking we could do things perfectly, more insanity. Thinking we need to be driven to be successful. I mean, when you think of the things, you know, when you really think about it, it's a lot, it's not happy stuff. Thinking we don't have choices. Or one of the biggest things, and this has been big for me, is thinking it's all that important. You know, the whole work thing, I know we do it all the time, and I know it's a source of money, and that's why it's so loaded and so emotionally overlaid. But I want to tell you, at the end of the day, whether that guy gets his letter 2 hours late is not all that important. Most of us in this room are not neurosurgeons. It isn't going to really matter. And they say that work addicts, I just read this, think that more things will happen. Like, I can't leave work, you don't understand what will happen. They can't live without me, everything will fall apart. I mean, this is the thinking. And the truth is, none of that's going to happen. And what was really interesting is that what this article said is that the people who are really dependent on work for fulfillment are usually not really all that highly valued employees. And I thought that was interesting. And because the employees that are doing less and doing it really effectively are getting better results. Okay? Because who they know, and you know, it's because they don't like me, and you know, they're just more effective. They're not that overwhelmed. Okay, so this is insanity, and there is no human power that can keep us sober, that can keep us abstinent. And so we have to go to step three, which is made a decision to turn our lives and our will, our money, our success, our livelihood, and well-being over to the care of God as we understand God. Well, this is a frightening prospect. You know, no control. Ugh. So I have had this, you know, I go through this myself all the time. So I want to tell you what I have observed is the reality. What I have observed is that each one of us is given amazing gifts, talents, and abilities. And nobody got shorted. Everybody has something really special to give. And if you are living in alignment with what your natural gifts, talents, and abilities are, if you are making the best effort to be the most joyful, passionate, fulfilling, productive person that you can possibly be, and you are making choices in alignment with that, and in alignment with what your highest purpose is, not the highest purpose of the company or your business, you know, but what are you really here to do? And the way that you figure that out is what gives you excitement and joy. And we have so perverted the concept of purpose and gotten it, tried to box it all up in a way that purpose will figure, will become some kind of corporate title. Well, if I could figure out my purpose, then I would know what title, what kind of job I'm looking for. No, it's much bigger than that. It has nothing to do with your job. Yes, we hope that your job is a reflection of it, and that you are what you take in your soul and your spirit to work is a reflection when you're at work. But I am not talking about purpose of getting you another job. I am talking about when you are living in a higher place, when you are living exclusively for the passion and joy of life. When you do that, you will find that things come pretty easily. And that is, it's organic. We're all meant to fit in a certain way. And so we have to kind of do what our job is here. And our job usually has not a lot to do with our job. And I think that all of us who are in recovery really understand that, you know, before our work, before our job, before our success, the first thing that has to happen is our sobriety. And that without that, all of this is irrelevant. Our spiritual path must be the first thing on the docket. And this is what opens up the mental doors and the spiritual doors, and in a way that no amount of hard work and controlling is ever going to be able to do. This, to me, is the essence of the third step, that I am going to turn my life and my will and my business and everything over to the care of this larger thing that I don't understand, but I know is operating in all of us. And I really, you know, and I want, you know, for people to kind of get that idea and then take it into their work and then take it into their relationships and then take it in to whatever it is they do. I'm going to tell you two quick stories that really highlight what I'm trying to say. Steve Jobs, when he gave his commencement address to Stanford University, I know it's a very famous speech, a lot of you know it. You know, one of the things that I really want all of you to do, and in a minute you're going to write what you're going to do, is to do things that have no intrinsic value except to increase your passion in life, to increase your joy in life, to increase your, you know, it's not necessarily about learning another QuickBooks. You know, you will find it will help you in job search. It will help you in your work. If you have other things going on in your life that really are heart opening and soulful. And so sometimes we have to go a zigzag way. And it's like, I certainly didn't know when I got cancer that it was going to open the fantastic door that it did, and that my sobriety was going to open up all the doors that it did. And so sometimes we have to do things for no other reason that there's energy to do it, even though we can't figure out why. A lot of times people will come to me and say, you're creative. How come you're not doing anything in that area? Oh, I work 6 hours a week. I have like that. Are you kidding me? And it's like, well, why don't you take an art class? Oh, I don't have time to take an art class. To build your work around the art class rather than trying to figure out how you're going to get an art class when you're working. You need to start reprioritizing your life and putting the passionate, joyful things in front and help your work in because Steve Jobs quit college and when he quit college, he took whatever classes he wanted. He's doing exactly what I'm telling you. And so he took calligraphy. And everybody said, geez, well, there's a useless class. But he loved it. And he talked about how he just had such great passion for this class. And he had no idea what he was going to do with it because everybody said, what are you going to do with calligraphy, for heaven's sake? It's a bunch of writing and script. And anyway, he said, it's interestingly enough, all of the fonts on the Apple computer today came from his calligraphy class. See, you know, you don't always know how God is going to use these talents. So you have to practice these talents in order for God to put them in the right place. The last thing I'll tell you about is a gal that I worked with, and she came to me because she was not very happy. And she said, I'm going to lose my job because my productivity is so low. And she said, I'm really concerned about it. And so we did this little questionnaire. And one of the questions on the questionnaire was, if you died tomorrow, what will you regret not having done? And her answer to that was salsa dancing. And so we went through the whole thing, and then at the end I said, you know, you need to start salsa dancing. And she's like, oh God, what kind of career counselor is this? You know, I mean, she said, she said, I need help. I don't need to be salsa dancing. I said, just trust me, you need to salsa dance. And and so anyway, she did. She in fact, she did it fairly quickly because she was a normie, and she took instruction well, and so what she did is she went out and took salsa dancing lessons. I mean, she took them a lot of lessons and very fast. And within about 4 to 6 weeks, she'd been salsa dancing almost every night. And she'd found this place and she'd met all these salsa dancers. And she was like, and she called me and she was just on cloud nine. She was having such a good time. She had not paid any attention to her work at all. But she went and did everything. But she just, like, she wasn't really paying attention. The story is that her company called her and said, we're just so impressed with what you've been doing because your numbers have just skyrocketed. And we want to know what it is that you're doing. That is so that we can pass it on to other people because obviously you've made a big change. And she called me in a total panic and she went, I have no idea what to say. And what I'm trying to get through is that when you pick up passion in any area, it moves into everything. We are holistic beings. We are not one-dimensional people. We have a soul. And that's what our recovery is about, allowing that soul to really express itself. And so, you know, for you to be working instead, I'm not saying don't work by any manner of means, but I'm saying to do nothing to really open up this side is really doing yourself and all of the rest of the world a tremendous disservice. So, on that note, I want you to turn over your piece of paper. I want you to think about all the new things that you could do, the crazy things that make no sense, you know. Allow for the God that you are turning your life over to start working in your life because you're going to follow the energy, okay? And that means what excites you. I will just tell you that just recently, this is just such I'm supported by my friends in AA, is that I'm an American Idol fan. I am the only probably one my age who is an American Idol fan. But I watch it and I'm glued and I love it. And I wanted to go to the tour. They just come and I texted her and I said, do you want to go to the Idol thing? She's like, oh, it's so loud and it's so this and this. But she had gone before. But you know, she said, I said, it's on my bucket list. She said, well, then we have to go, you know? And so. Thank you, Teresa. And so we're going, and the excitement I have about doing this is like these rocker kids and watch them on stage with fireworks at the Greek. Oh my God, I'm so happy. Is this gonna help my work? I don't know, but it's really helping my life. Yes, ma'am. I honestly don't remember. I don't. But she didn't stop salsa dancing, I'll tell you that. And eventually she quit the company. That's how that goes. Okay, I want you to do just this last thing. I want you to write this last thing, which is the thing that you're going to fill in with. When they train dogs, remember, they stop and then they replace. So you beyond stopping, you need to replace it with something. So what's a passionate thing that you're going to replace a small thing? If you, yes, Mr. Servio, yes.
I'm going to quit reading the newspaper in the morning. I read a newspaper every morning. I've got a bunch of magazines, they're design magazines, design. So I read this newspaper myself. design magazines are stacking up, and I'm not reading those.
Oh!
I don't have to read who shot somebody, what car got stolen, what place got broken into. I don't read all that stuff, or the political stuff. I just quit 2 to 4 weeks, so I'm going to quit reading all the newspaper and all the ads and see what happens.
Whoa! So he's saying that instead of reading his design, which he really loves because he's an artist, instead he's start reading the newspaper because it is kind of repetitive, and start spending more time with his design magazine. So that's a great thing. Thanks, Darn. Who else has something to offer? Yes, ma'am.
I'm going to watercolor paint more.
Watercolor paint.
And
okay.
I wasn't doing it because my room. My second room to do it in was all junky and cluttering, and my girlfriend's staying with me for the weekend, and I made it real beautiful and clean. And now because it's peaceful. So I'm excited.
Watercolor. And yeah, I know you. I'm going to keep you to that. Handing out some evaluations. We're going to wrap this up in a minute, and I really appreciate it if you would fill them out, because it's this last ones, they really help a lot, and makes the next one better. And anybody else? What is something you're going to replace? What are you going to do?
Salsa.
Take salsa, she said. Yes, Casey.
Humor.
We're gonna humor. I like that. Anybody else have anything to share? Yes, ma'am.
Mine is just, I absolutely have to when I clock out. I have to.
When we clock out. Yeah. What you've done there is really good, because it's grounded in something very concrete. It's not just I'm going to quit work. It's like, I'm going to clock out and I'm going to leave the building. And, you know, that's a very good concrete thing. And that's what happens when we start following stuff that really interests us. We will find that it will leak into every part of our lives.
Surprising.
It is surprising. Yes, ma'am.
My sponsor's had me for a while now. She tells me every day when I go into work, laugh, lunch, and leave. That's it.
Let's say laugh, lunch, and leave. I'm going to use that one. Laugh, lunch, and leave. Okay. You guys are awesome. Okay. So, any other questions? Yes.
I know that I'm trying to get attention a lot and doing it. So how do I stop getting attention?
How you stop getting attention?
I'm always like trying. Oh yeah, I can do that. Oh yeah, I can do that. And
well, you're probably overextending yourself. Okay. Is that true? I mean, you're doing too much.
Yeah, we're.
Yeah.
It's not really getting me the positive attention.
Right. Yeah. So. It's not about, it's about doing quality stuff. So start to look at, hey, is that something I really want to do, or am I just doing it so this guy likes me? You know, try to separate it out. Just say, is this something I really want to do? Is this a way I can really contribute because I really have skills and talent in this area? Or am I just doing it because, to be liked? You know, I don't know if that helps, but you know, we're all doing stuff to please people. I mean, that's pretty much how we were all raised, you know, basically 5 years old, you know, and we're all looking for somebody to love us, you know, in every form. So there's nothing wrong with that. You want to manage your energy correctly. And so if you're doing stuff that you like doing, because that's where the overwhelm comes a lot, is that we've just said no to so many things and there's not enough energy to go around. It's all about energy, you know? Manage your energy. Yes. Oh, back here. Good, good.
Do you have any resources out there? One of the things that really came to light today was when you said that the people who, I forget exactly how you said it, but I'm going to paraphrase, the people who aren't caught up in what we're caught up in are the most effective.
Yes.
And that when you, you mentioned that study about, you know, people who work for fulfillment are the least valued.
No, not people who are not working for fulfillment. No, I'm not saying that. People who work for fulfillment are highly valued. I'm saying people who work are workaholic, we're work addicted, often, you know, are a little...
There's some ability that some people have, most of them probably not one of us, right, who are able to detach enough to be viewed as more successful, productive, effective, happier, you know what I mean?
Detachment is a great word. Yes. Yeah, because they're not coming from neediness. They're coming from, hey, I'm going to get the job done. Oh, there's probably a million.
I've hit upon a couple of them, like overcoming your strength. Yeah. It talks about that one particular kind of quirk difference between us and them. Because it really is.
You know, I can't tell you, you know, a great resource for all is Workaholics Anonymous. There is a Workaholics Anonymous. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's another program. It is yet another program. Oh, take... Here, Judy, I'm sorry. People want to hand back their things.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, can you do that while I'm... Yeah, because we're going to... Thank you. Yes, ma'am.
I just want to personally thank you. You saved me $30 for my Kaiser copay.
I aim to please.
It's gotten to a point where I just thought, well, I'll just call a psychiatrist and I'll, you know. Because seriously, thinking that something is seriously wrong. And in the last hour, it's all been revealed to me.
Oh, that's terrific. Oh, that's very, very rewarding to me. Thank you so much. Yes, ma'am, we'll take one more.
Okay, I just wanted to thank you. I'm surprised to be a part of the roundup. My sponsor directed me to write on going back to work and how I was going to do things differently. And I
yes.
had no idea what she was talking about. I said,
yeah.
Why is she asking me this? And this is just a gift.
Awesome. Incidentally, I will tell you, if you are interested in me coming to a meeting and speaking specifically on this, depending on what the format of your meeting is, not appropriate for a lot of meetings, but if there is one and you would like me to come talk about this, I am happy to do it. This is a great passion for me, and this is a way that I can really authentically be of service, and it makes me feel really good because... Oh, good point. Let's see. I hope I brought some cards. Yeah, I have a few.
I have some too.
Oh, and she has some. Oh my God, thank you. So I'll come in and.
What's your website?
What's my website? FiredUpForSuccess.com. So, anyway, I want to thank you all. First of all, I wanted to congratulate you for coming, for doing it. We had a great crowd here today. I'm really excited. And I want you to know that you've all just started on the first three steps. And I think it's really important to acknowledge when you do things, because we as a group never know when it's enough. And so we never know when it's done, and we never know when we've been a good kid. Y'all have been great kids. Now take it to work. Yay.
hope you've enjoyed this recording. To obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the month club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.